The Tantrum House Board Game Podcast is recorded live from Studio WKRB in Greenville, South Carolina. This podcast is brought to you by our friendly local game store, Boardwalk, purveyors of fine games, Bezier Games, the new classics, Final Frontier Games, bringing friends and families closer together, The Game Steward, your second chance at Kickstarter games, and Game Toppers LLC, upgrading your gaming experience. Your hosts are Prognosticator Supreme, peering into the swirling mist of future Kickstarters and glimpsing the diamonds in the rough. So buckle up, seriously, especially if you're driving right now, because you're about to arrive at the Tantrum House.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. Today we got Will Meadows.
Sarah Meadows.
Kevin Delp.
Melissa Delp.
Katie Pills.
And Ryan Pills.
In the house!
We all sound pretty rough.
I'm houses. Sorry.
Woo! Yeah, all the houses.
It is kind of fun to actually see our faces this week,
yeah.
Even though it's still virtual. We're trying something different.
Yeah, trying some new software that was recommended by Mike last week. Thank you. If this turns out great and everybody loves it, props to you. If everyone hates it, we blame you, Mike. but this is pretty cool. We're having the opportunity to see each other, which we haven't done the last couple of times. We've been using software that just records our audio. Tonight, though, in lieu of our traditional, regular monthly game night, which we do on the last Monday of every month, since we're not doing that tonight, we did hop onto Facebook and we played a brand new game together, which was a lot of fun, and then we left the cameras intact for our podcast. So we should be able to see each other's smiling faces while we talk about Q's and Q's. What'd you guys think?
I liked it. It felt like a mix between Codenames and Pantone. Codenames, of course, from CGE, and Pantone from, I think, is it WizKids? I forget. Anyway, this
and
is...
And a little bit of Battleship thrown in there.
A little bit of Battleship thrown in, yes. I liked it because it's all about colors, and I love colors, so...
I love colors, but was not very good at this game.
No, it was funny.
It was about the nuances of colors.
No, me, I wasn't very good at it.
Oh,
you did great.
I really enjoyed it. So basically, I think Melissa should explain a brief overview of what the game is.
So in Hues and Cues, if you are the active player who's going to give the cues, which are kind of like clues, but hey, Q rhymes with hue. Anyway, you're going to have a card with several colors on them, and you're going to choose one, and there's this board with a large grid of colors.
Like, super, like, think of a large grid and then, like, triple it.
It's, like, 30 across, and...
Would it go down to...
A Monopoly board and a
like
half?
P?
How big was it?
Yeah, 30 across, and then it went from A to P.
A to P.
Which is less than 26, because I know my alphabet, but...
Yes.
Still.
But it was still a lot of colors.
And the gradients, I mean, I know we were doing it virtually. The gradients were super fine between each other.
Right. So imagine it like down in the left-hand corners are kind of yellows, and then it goes to greens, and then blues, and...
Neons.
Depending on your definition.
Anyway, if you're the active player, you're going to have a card, you're going to choose one of the colors on it, and it may be kind of this reddish color, and it will say D10 as the coordinate that you're trying to get people to guess. You give a one-word clue, something like strawberry.
Whatever.
And then other players, in turn order, put their pawn onto one of those grid spaces.
What they think that color actually is.
And there's like 15 different red spaces, and then there are some pink spaces.
Right.
And so everyone puts
one. And then there's cheerwine spaces, which are nothing like bubble gum, Will.
I feel like you guys just need to go drink some cheerwine.
Coming back to it.
That's going to come back to haunt you all the time.
I don't feel how I could do any worse than that than grape, which there's like 5 different colors of grapes.
Hey.
Most of the people, when they think of grape, it's a purple color.
Right.
So anyway, after that first clue and everyone puts their pawn down, then the clue giver gives a second cue, which is 2 words, and everyone in reverse turn order gets to put their second pawn down. After all the pawns are down, there's this 3x3 cardboard kind of box that you set on the grid, on the space where your grid thing was.
So you'd be D10. Like D10 would be in the middle of that box.
And
so
then, yeah, the spaces around it are in the box. Mm-hmm.
So there'd be 9 spaces in the box.
Any pawns inside that box are going to get more points. Mm-hmm. If you guess it correctly, it's like 3 points, then 2 points if you're in there.
If you're on the outside edge of the box, it's worth 1 point. But the cue giver gets points if people actually are in the box.
Right. So
max of 9 because you're not allowed to, you can only have 1 pawn per square. So max of 9. I think the most was like 6 or 7.
5 or 6, maybe, yeah. 6 when we played.
Yeah, I didn't see anybody get 9, but that would have been cool. But 6 or 7 is actually a lot of points. So what do you got? What did Will and Sarah think?
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I liked guessing more than giving the clues. Giving the clues was a little difficult. After playing once, I could see how your perception of something is very different from everybody else's.
Agreed. Because you can't explain that one clue.
Yeah, that's definitely A3, Will.
This hot pink red right there. Cheer one for the win. This is great. Being able to show each other colors is great. I did thoroughly enjoy it. I think I probably lost from our entire team, but it had the fun and the team feel of like Code Names, where one person's giving the clue and everybody else is trying to guess. I felt like it was even though it was hard to come up with perfect clues, it was easier to come up with clues than Code Names a lot of times.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
So like the AP, very low.
Sure, because
you're able to taper it a little bit like to your audience, you could definitely give clues that people would correlate well to. Is that a way to phrase that? I don't know. Kevin gave the clue Yoshi, which was like perfect because I think we pretty much nailed it on the first clue.
It was perfect, except for then his second clue was what, dark sea foam or something?
And it was semi-dark sea foam Yoshi.
Semi-dark sea foam. And we're like, what?
Yoshi's not. I was just trying to get you a little lighter green than what you think of Yoshi as, like a very bright green, right? So yeah, I was just wanting like a little bit lighter than Yoshi. I know sea foam is definitely more like blue green, but that's okay. Yeah. It was fun.
Yeah, yeah. I had a good time playing it.
I felt like Melissa and I did a lot of things where I guessed, you know, her answer right, and she was always like right there close to my answer. So I felt like Melissa and I had the same perception of color. Which was interesting.
We were in sync there.
Yes, we were.
Maybe our screens were very similar in the colorization.
Well, I don't know, because Kevin was way off.
I think once I was able to get zoned in, then I was nailing it. Your neon clue, listening audience, let us know. What color do you think of when you think of neon? Step 1.
Yeah. Yeah, Katie.
Because I wasn't even close at all on the first clue. But
I will say, Will and Kevin were the only two who didn't put it at least in the right color zone. Y'all were the only two. All the people online, all the ladies,
including the designer of the game, who didn't say I was right. Yeah, but I will say, once you gave your second clue,
everybody else went into yellow.
But then I nailed it on the second clue. So
you did.
That was like my biggest comeback in the game.
So on the board, I figured out the math. There are 480 choices of spaces.
Wow, that's close to 500 different color options.
Really? Wow.
Yep. Yeah, 30 like times like 16.
30 times 16.
What's that, like 8-bit, 16-bit? I don't know how the math works. 480 by 720? I don't know.
Oh, interesting. I don't know.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I think it's
there's
cool
some
because
kind of screen resolution in there.
Every game is going to be different, not only because you're choosing different colors, but then you get to choose the cues, the clues that you're giving can be fun and interesting. That's why I was like trying to find, like I did like Yoshi because I was like trying to find a green that was like a fun green or something that people would enjoy talking about. So I think the person giving the clues can have fun with it, trying to think of pop culture references, can try and think of things that will make the game enjoyable for the players that are in it. So
yep, absolutely. And that I enjoyed that part of it a lot as well. You could just say banana, or you could get specific and make, you know, fun things that people know what you're referencing.
Like unripe banana, which was one of the
which is a green color.
It was a very green, yellow.
FYI. Well, cool. What other games did you guys get an opportunity to play this week?
Well, Ryan and I got to try out the game Zona.
It is a 2 to 3 hour game, so buckle up if you're going to do it.
Yeah, we did not realize that going in, and Ryan was like, I think I need to take a break. It's like 9 o'clock.
Yeah, we started at 7, and it was like 9:30, I think.
Yeah.
By the time we had read the rules and played a half of the game.
Yeah, so...
What is the game?
It is a game... The story of the game is there has been a nuclear blast of some kind, or...
It's Chernobyl. I mean, it's more like a fantastic Chernobyl.
Yeah.
Because there's, like, anomalies and psychics and weird...
Mutant animals and people. Anyway, but basically, it's asymmetrical player powers. You get a survivor and you move around the board. You have to like fight or overcome some of these obstacles, and you gather supplies that will help you better do stuff. But you're trying, the goal of the game is to try to figure out these secrets that are in these hidden labs. And you are attempting in the end to infiltrate the nuclear power plant and find the sarcophagus.
Whoa.
Sarcophagus at Chernobyl?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not super sure why
that's
there. Is
there a mummy in there?
I think the idea is the cement concrete shell that they put over the meltdown plant or whatever, that's called the sarcophagus. You're trying to investigate what's going on there.
Yes. Gotcha. So it's, you're trying to, you have to do these different clues and go through harder and harder territories. Like the closer you get to where the meltdown was, the more the obstacles are trying to kill you. So it's pretty neat. It actually reminded me a little bit of Firefly, the board game.
What?
Yeah. Just with, because you go and you're going to different locations, you're collecting things. Firefly has a ton of different variable ways to win based on whatever your card says you're doing. But this one, it is just a specific way. Like, you have to gather information and secrets and then make it to the sarcophagus. But it does have that feel, because you're going across and around the board collecting things, and you know that in certain places you'll find more of this type of thing or that, you know. So it sort of reminded me of that a little.
That's cool. I mean, I enjoy Firefly, and I also need to take a break after playing that for 3 hours, so
yeah.
Maybe it's not out of out of my ballpark. Did you guys finish it up, or are you, that's like the pause point? Can you resume, start from the beginning?
Oh, yeah, we started up again the next morning. We take a break to sleep.
That is hardcore gaming right there.
Yeah, so we resumed the next morning and finished it up rather quickly.
Yeah, I got hung up on trying to bring my morality up from neutral to good, like have a good reputation, and it just took a long time to accomplish. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, Katie went to the sarcophagus. I can't say that word right now. Sarcophagus, and finished the game. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, your reputation as a traveler means a lot in this game. So you have to, like, there's some things you can just overcome quickly because you just have a good reputation and people are going to help you out in the game.
Yeah, I didn't realize early on that a bad reputation was going to cost me, because there's a space very early on that you can trade a neutral reputation for a bad one and get an equipment card. And I was like, oh, okay, that's a quick equipment card that'll help me out. But then I just kept pulling event cards that was like, if you have a good or neutral reputation, get this amazing thing. If you have a bad reputation, get kicked in the shins.
Poor Ryan.
Yeah. So I had the same sort of thing as Ryan, except for I just accidentally got a good reputation. Oh. And I was like, after a couple of events where I was like, oh, if you have a good reputation, just go ahead and pass. You don't even have to roll for this. I was like, oh, snap, I got to keep this good reputation.
Melissa and I played a few games over the weekend. One we will talk about at the end of the show because it has a story with it and there's a terrible act of betrayal that we need to discuss on the podcast in front of other people. but we'll leave you as give that as a tease right now. And I would like to talk about right now Glenmore 2 Chronicles.
Oh, you guys get to play that?
From Fun Tales. Yes, this cool. is a drafting, Rondell tile drafting game. And this game is actually an older game, Glenmore, but they have revamped it called Glenmore 2 Chronicles. But and they've added a lot of what you would call like modules to the game. So there's a base game where, you know, you're trying to collect wheat and stone and cows and sheep and put them in your farm based on how you're building your own little farmland up. And in, I guess, Glenmore.
Yeah, and, kind of a city.
And you're getting points from how you're where you're putting your tiles, trading in those resources to get points. And at the end of every round, you're getting points for having people in your castle, different types of people, that different cars and things like that. And and whiskey barrels, having those as well. Compared, you're getting points compared to the other players. So... in a two-player game, it's pretty easy to figure out what your points are going to be. I'm wondering in like a three- or four-player game, it would be a little more difficult to figure out what your points are going to be at the end of a given round before it ends, basically what I'm saying. But the modules are cool because they add different thematic elements to the game. We played one that had haggis. We played...
Yum. You're creating haggis and yes, serving it.
Serving it. I decided not even to go the haggis route, which was very... It was very luck-based. And I'm thinking, oh, I'm just going to try and get points a different way. Melissa went the haggis route. Her first two rounds, she got like 2 points and like 4 points. It's like, yeah, I'm glad I did not go that route.
This is horrible.
She just like was not doing well at all with that. And then the last round, she got like 18 points. Luckily, just by pure chance, she
embraced the haggis.
Pure chance.
It was pure chance. She had to roll a 1, a 2, and a 3 out of 4 rolls. And there are 50% chance of rolling a 1. And, like, there's only 2 2s and 1 3 on the thing. And, yes, she pulled it out in the end, and that basically gave her the win on that game. But I came back the next game, and we played a different module. It was the Loch Ness, Nessie sort of module.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, it is fun. And I wiped the board.
Yes, there's at the end of the game, you lose points for having more tiles than the person with the fewest tiles. So I had 4 more tiles in my city than Kevin did, and I lost 3 points
per
each of
tile.
Those.
So she lost 12 points for that.
Yes.
Just ouch. That one thing.
Yep.
So that's Glenmore 2 Chronicles. There's about, like, I think 7 or 8 modules plus the Loch Ness, which is like a special, I think, Kickstarter thing that we got with it. But yeah, I enjoy Glenmore 2. I'm excited to try some more modules out.
Yeah.
Will and Sarah, what have you guys been playing?
So a game we've got to the table several times recently is Montmartre. This is a small box card game, and it is about artwork, making and producing, selling artwork back right after like post-impressionism. So it's...
it looks cool.
Yeah, it's very well done artwork in the game. So you have a very small...
So they're not like famous paintings. They're more like artist renditions of what the time period art looked like.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they look familiar. They probably tried to mimic styles of specific Renaissance-esque looking paintings.
Renaissance?
That's what it looks like to me.
I
don't know what art history Will studied, but definitely post-impressionistic, almost into cubism for some of it. But think Toulouse-Lautrec and early Picasso and stuff like that. So in the game, you have a hand of 4 cards. You can do two different things. You can either paint paintings, so you'll place them down in your tableau in front of you. And then when you do, you have the option to sell them just to the market, which is you just get 1 coin per painting. Or instead of that, you can any paintings that you already have down in your tableau, you can sell to any one of the art connoisseurs. So there is an art broker that you send to that pile. So there's four stacks, four different art collectors who are looking for art, and they have a very specific color or style of painting that they're looking for. So you move the token that's the broker to that one. So if the broker has just sold something to that one connoisseur, you can't sell to them directly again. So it's a interesting, the when you're able to sell, you have to have the most of that type of painting, or you have to have, there's numbers on all the cards. You have to have the highest value of cards based on the number. So it was a really good little card game. I was very surprised by the strategy and thinking involved in, do I just go ahead and sell these, you know, low numbered cards now? If, and the collectors, all of the piles, they start out on with just a value of 2, and then it goes all the way down to 10. So if you sell a lot of stuff at the beginning, you're not getting very much money for it. If you wait, it, you know, you get a bigger reward. But then there's also some newspaper. You can sell to the newspaper one time during the game. So kind of like some of those bonuses like Rise of Augustus or even Sagrada, where it's a one-time thing, if, and you have to be the first one to get it. So pushing your luck towards one of those. I thoroughly enjoyed the game. I was very surprised by it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it as well. It definitely doesn't look like a whole lot on the table choice-wise, because you've got like four stacks of patrons and a pile of newspapers that you can draw from, or that you can that you can get the points from, and then a couple stacks to draw from. But yeah, trying to figure out, like, if I have two cards and she only has one, and I have a 5 and she has a 7, but I can see a 6 on the board that she might draw, and which one will give me the most points? Do I hold out? A lot of, like, playing chicken in the game as well, the push your luck kind of thing. Like, I could get this point right now, but I'd rather her take it, and then I'll get 4 points on my turn. Oh, she didn't take it. Should I just take it? What is that? So, yeah, nice pressure for sure.
Yeah, and it almost felt like a Reiner Knizia game, actually. I've played several of his card games that there's a little bit of math and thinking involved. It kind of felt like a couple of those I've played, but anyway, I thoroughly enjoyed it. You should check it out. Montmartre. Not saying my French correctly, but
yeah, I'm close, not even going to try to pronounce it. There's lots of letters in it. It's a long word. Good luck Googling it.
The name is actually a section in Paris where there are a lot of art galleries, and some of that, all of that time period of that art was based in this section of Paris.
Oh, cool.
The other game that I played this weekend was called Try to Blow Up Your Grill. It was fun.
Oh, no.
That sounds interesting, Will. Tell us about it.
So 2 weeks ago, we went to grill out burgers, and the burner inside my grill was like just nothing was coming out of it. And I was like, oh, maybe we're out of gas. So I went and got a new tank, filled it up, plugged it in. Still the same thing. Okay, it must actually be the burner component in the grill. Go buy a new component, install it. I feel like I'm doing this right. I don't know.
So I go to grill because I'm usually the one who grills, not Will.
Oh, my.
And I'm like, nope, this is not correct. Like, I said, you need to come fix this. Like, because I tried to undo the tank, but the tank wouldn't screw on. So I was like, huh, okay, I'll let you work on it.
Yeah, so I screwed it on. It was just not screwed on all the way. So I screwed it all the way in, and then I release it, and I can, like, hear the gas flowing. And I was like, I feel like that's too much. I shouldn't be able to hear that much. So unscrew it, rescrew it again, turn it on. Yeah, okay, that sounds better. And then, like, as I was fiddling around with the bottom stuff, I must have broken the igniter thing, because I'm pushing the button, click, nothing, click, nothing, click, nothing, click, nothing. Whoosh!
Oh, my goodness.
I, like, knew it was coming, too, because I was like, if it doesn't click on this next one, I'm going to have to stop and let this whole area air out. But I'm just going to push the button one more time.
And your hair and eyebrows are still intact.
Yeah, glad you still have eyebrows.
But my hand, which you can't see, not as much intact.
Wow. So,
about from the fingertips to the mid wrist, missing most hair.
Wow. As we've had a similar situation with a gas stove, and when I was a teenager, and my brother lost both of his eyebrows.
Oh, man.
Yeah. That. Sarah actually managed to walk around the corner right as I did it.
Right, when it happened.
And so, like, in my head, I was even thinking, like, it's going to poof, you know, like, if it lights at this point, it's been on long enough, it's going to do it. And so even though it did it and I knew it was going to do it and I expected it fully, there's no way to, like, not react.
Sure.
Like a small, scared child when a flaming inferno lights up in front of you. So, like, just whoosh, I jump back, ah, you know, a little girl scream in there. And Sarah didn't even ask if I was okay, because I immediately started laughing, and it was obvious that, like, I didn't get really burned.
Well, but your facial hair was intact, so I knew everything was okay.
Yeah, but it was the most exciting game I played all week.
Well, I'm glad we're still having fun and still able to play games, even though we are apart. I think it's time for our Kickstarter conniption.
Kickstarter conniption.
This episode we'll be talking about three games coming to Kickstarter the week of May 4th, 2020. Kevin, go ahead and start us off.
Yeah, so Melissa and I were able to play a game called Sea of Legends from Guildhall Studios, a prototype, and this is coming to Kickstarter on May the 5th. This is a 1-4-player narrative-driven sort of sandbox or open-world type board game. It plays in about 35 minutes per player, and you are basically pirates, and you are going around this board and doing piratey things like raiding ports and burying treasure. You are defeating your nemesis and maybe even falling in love. And the interesting thing is this game, like I said, is narrative driven. And the way it does that in the board game is there's an app that is sort of connected to the game where you are inputting your title or who you are and then who your nemesis is and who your lover is going could be. And throughout the game, it actually has you encounter those things or those people, and different things could happen that could make the game worse or better for you as you upgrade and as you basically defeat your nemesis or fall in love. And you're trying to gain notoriety. That's the point of the game. You're trying to gain notoriety, and you do that through these different actions.
Yes, and your nemesis and your lover, those are cards. There are tons of different cards in the game, so you choose ones to play those roles in your story, and you input that into the app.
There's also NPCs in the game where there's always Spanish galleons, and I think the base game comes with, like, undead pirates and, like, these merfolk that are actually roaming the board as well, that sort of are taking turns in between your turn, and you're going to be able to attack them. You're going to be able, they're going to be able to attack you. They're trying to complete their own objective. So if, like, the merfolk are trying to find these, like, ancient runes and take them to their god, and if they can get all, I think, 4 or 5 runes, then that NPC would actually win the game. So you are trying to fight these NPCs throughout the game too.
So a little bit of a semi-co-op feel against the NPCs.
But you could totally ignore them and do very well in the game, I think. I mean,
unless they actually win.
Yeah, it's going to take a while from the collect all the stuff. So there's other ways for you to gain notoriety. But you're going to run into them anyway. So, you know, fighting them off for a battle actually is helping you.
Because that would give you notoriety.
Yep, if you win.
True.
So that's Sea of Legends from Guildhall Studios. The artwork's pretty sweet. I'm pretty sure we're getting a promo card for our Kickstarter campaign.
Ooh.
And I think we're going to be a pirate or something. I don't know exactly what it'll be, but it's definitely going to have a Tantrum House feel to it. So.
And you did a preview video?
Yeah, preview video that'll be live when you're listening to this. So check out Sea of Legends from Guildhall Studios. Over to Ryan and Katie.
All right. We are talking about Pulp Invasion. This is a 1-2-player space exploration type game.
That's a really interesting player count, because you don't usually see, like, 2-player games that you can also play solo. Usually it's a much larger capacity that also has a solo mode.
Yeah. So I think this is mainly a solo game that has the ability to be player versus player. Hmm. So, yeah. So I think it's mainly a solo game. But the idea is that you are this undercover intergalactic alliance spy, maybe. And you're posing as just a ship captain, and you are investigating the invasion of aliens into three different planets that are a part of this this Federation or whatever the alliance is there. And so this is actually a card, like a deck building, a bag building, and dice rolling push your luck style game. So you're going to be using the cards to explore different sectors in on the map. You'll be using the dice to do combat with different encounters, I'm sure. And then the I think the dice go in the bag, so you're building up your pool of dice in your bag. Anyway, but that is. Oh, and I'd like to mention, too, that the art on this is like any kind of pulp, older, like, Pulp Fiction type art, where it's, like, very retro and very interesting to look at. It looks like the cover of an old science fiction story, novel or something. It's really...
Oh, very nice.
It is really interesting, so... I assume that the art will be throughout the game, but that was just the box cover that I was looking at. So it was pretty interesting. And that is Pulp Invasion. Will.
Let's look at this game called Lost Lights. It's coming from Board Game Circus. It's a two-player game. Can you also play it as a one-player?
I believe it's a two-player battle game only.
Only. Are you sure? It might be a solo variant. We don't know. It is a card drafting in a pretty cool way. And then area control dice battle game. Real small box, but pretty big experience. And the artwork for it is fantastic.
Yep. So in the game, you start off drafting 10 cards. You'll draw two. And then you'll keep one, and you'll give the other card to your opponent to go in their hand. So you do that 5 times so that you each have 10 cards. And then you have a small little map, and you place 3 of your crystals out on the map to designate the 3 spaces you'll start on. And then you'll each take turns playing a card out of your hand. The cards are all double use. So you can use them to take actions to place out more of your crystals out on the board to mark your territories, or you can save it and use the cards for their battle abilities.
Yeah, one of the things that I enjoyed thoroughly about the game, I love card drafting games. I feel like, I don't know why, but I just enjoy like, oh yeah, this is the best of all these cards. Give the rest to this other person. I'm sure other games use this same drafting method, but being able to pick 2 cards and, like, either it's super obvious, oh, this is the trash card, ha, stuck you with the trash card, enjoy, or, ooh, these are both really good, which one is better? Oh, I like this one even better, pass it on. I felt like that style of drafting was just a really enjoyable experience to play. And yep. Then you get your whole hand of cards, and you've got half that are these really great cards that you picked, and you were like, yeah, I love all these. And then you pick up the other half that you got from the other player, and you're like, oh, crap, these all suck.
Or you're like, oh, some of these aren't bad.
So then trying to formulate a new strategy, and there's a bunch of cards that are in the deck, so you can replay it over and over with different combinations of cards. And then being able to try to use those to, okay, these are the ones that have really high attack power. Oh, these also have the most action points on them, too. Now how do I decide which way am I going to play them in order to dominate this board? I wasn't as good at that part. Sarah beat me like every time.
I usually really bad at area control games, but I pulled it off almost every time against Will, which was very surprising. He was like, I think it's just because the very first time, they do have a preset deck that you can use, a pre-constructed deck. And so I used that, and he was like, well, I just think the decks weren't that great. So I was like, okay, well, let's draft. So you're choosing what you get, and then he still didn't do
it. I was way closer second time.
But one other thing, the cards...
But she still beat me like four times after that too, so...
Yeah. The cards all have, or most of them... the very high-valued attack cards don't have an action on them, but many of them have an additional action that changes up the way that the battles go. So you may have a card that has very low attack towards the other player, but has a really good power that may throw the other player off or not count some of their ability to attack you. So, very interesting little game for... just what all the components are.
Yeah, small box, but a lot of stuff going on. It was a very cool one. I think that pretty much wraps it up for our Kickstarter, Conniption. We do have Mike Davis joining us yet again for his Mad Meeple segment.
Mike Davis is the Mad Meeple. Now it's time for why he loves it and hates it.
Hello, this is Mike Davis from the Game and Party Podcast, and this is the Mad Meeple segment. Today we talk about the game Sagrada. Sagrada plays from 1 to 4 players in about 30 to 45 minutes. It's for ages 14 and up. It is a dice drafting, dice placement game from Floodgate Games. And now, I'd like to share with you why I love this game. The first reason I love Sagrada is it is beautiful. It is stained glass windows. The dice are beautiful. It is a game that just draws you in when you see it on the table. The second reason I love Sagrada is it's easy to teach. You can pull this out and teach it to just about anybody in less than 5 minutes. And the third reason I love Sagrada is the variability in the game. You have public objectives and private objectives, so every time you play the game, you get a different setup. And now I'd like to share with you why I hate this game. The first reason I hate Sagrada is hate drafting. That's right, people take the dice you want every time. If they see that you only need one red dice to complete an objective, and they don't really want a red die, they're going to take it. And the second reason I hate Sagrada is when you put a dice down and then a couple of turns later you realize, oh, I shouldn't have put that there. Oh, and you're stuck. There's no moving it. Unless you can get to one of the tool cards. Which brings me to my third reason I hate Sagrada. You want to use one of those tool cards, but someone else uses it first. And now the cost is doubled and maybe you can't afford it. And that's it, guys. That's why I love and why I hate Sagrada. You've been listening to the Mad Meeple, Mike Davis.
That's a pretty tough one, because Sagrada, I mean, you're supposed to hate the fact that you locked your die into that trashy place early in the game. Without that, I don't know that there's a whole lot of game to it, but I do agree, Sagrada is a very solid game. I think when you only have complaints that are, oh, it's hard to play if bad things happen to you.
Almost all tile games where you're placing something, that's where it goes the rest of the game. There's not a lot of them where you can move something around. And if you can, it costs you a lot to do that.
There actually is a new game.
Totally okay.
A new game called Zen Garden from Queen Games, where your tiles are movable within a grid. It's kind of fun.
About time.
Well, you can kind of push them one direction as long as you haven't locked them in yet.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Anyway, but I agree. Yeah, Sagrada is definitely place the die. And it's like, oh, why did I place it there? Why didn't I pick something else? But I enjoy, especially with the expansion. There's two expansions out now, right?
At least,
I think there's two. And there's more on the way.
The sparkly dice.
So, yeah. Floodgate does a great job with it.
Yep. Fun stuff. All right. So, did you say you have a tale of betrayal and mystery?
Yes. Are we ready for this?
I'm ready. I've been ready. I was trying to push the whole episode along so I could just get to the betrayal at the house on the Delp.
Oh, man. Okay. So, let's set the stage a little bit. So, a couple of weeks ago, someone said, why don't you guys play... an old classic Thurn and Taxis from Rio Grande. Oh. And
Live.
I was like, yeah, that's fun. It's an enjoyable route-building game, sort of similar to Ticket to Ride if you're not familiar with Thurn and Taxis.
It was the 2006 Spiel des Jahres winner.
Mm-hmm. and I really enjoy playing it. Usually the strategies go, Kevin pushes the game along and what's called cart writing, which basically rushes the game. That's my strategy normally, and Melissa usually wins by going the better strategy, but I still enjoy playing and building the routes. You're building routes in Bavaria, postal routes in Bavaria. That's sort of the theme, and really cool colors. I like the color theme. I like the theme. It's the game theme itself, and I like the building of the routes and how the game mechanics work. Really simple mechanics, but still very enjoyable with how you do that. So we're playing the game, having a great time, enjoying the banter with the people who are watching, and found out that actually Third and Taxes is called Turn in Taxes, because in Old German, the TH sound is actually a T sound and not a Th sound. So that's something we learned. So now we call it Turn in Taxes, even though it looks like Thurn in Taxes. Anyway, we're continuing on, and I'm rushing the game along.
Yep, he keeps cart riding to get to the next carriage.
So we're near the last carriage, and I'm like, oh, I could actually literally cart right now and end the game. But you know, I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to be nice. I'm going to make it go a few more rounds so that not only the live stream goes longer, but it'll give Melissa a little bit of chance to lay some more of her houses, because houses at the end are negative points. And I'm like, I'm going to be nice. So actually, I think it went like two or three more rounds. It came to like near the end of the game, and Melissa's like, oh, I could actually end the game. Let me hear her side of the story before I jump back in.
So basically, Kevin was the start player. So if he triggers the end of the game, I get one more turn. But if I trigger the end of the game, it's over. Kevin does not get to play anymore. So we get to a point, and I'm looking at the board state. Kevin has, I don't know, maybe 8 cards down. He's going to end it most likely on his next turn, and he's going to grab a ton of points.
Which is literally 3 rounds after I could have ended it. So
now, is this like something where the audience was voting on it? Like, don't go out, Kevin, don't go out. Or is this all in your secret head? Like, I could go out right now.
So Kevin's thing was in his secret head. I'm looking at the board, and all of a sudden I go, oh, wow, I could actually end it this turn. Kevin, would you hate me forever if I ended this?
And I said,
I'm having this struggle.
And I said, yes, I would not like you to end because I prolonged the game. So it'd be nice if you could do one more round. And I only have 1 card point with no point tokens. I have literally no point tokens. So literally my whole game would be a total of 10 points. Melissa has at least 3 or 4 tokens already out and a card.
I thought you're going to let me talk. Anyway, so my brother Charlie and my sister-in-law Hannah are actually watching, and they're kind of being the little shoulder devils, and they're egging me on. They're like, finish him. Don't be nice.
Sweep the leg. No mercy.
Sweep the leg.
So I'm thinking, I'm like, okay, if I go out now, I'm going to get a ton of points. If I wait, Kevin's going to get a ton of points, and he might beat me. So I usually like to play nice and kind and all of that, but I don't know. These people online keep telling me that I should just finish it.
The peer pressure. It's too much.
So I said, okay, I'm going to finish it.
And I said, don't do it. This will be forever and lived in infamy.
And we'll count the points, but then we'll go ahead and play it out again and count the points. But just know, either way, I'm going to win.
Okay, good play.
So
I said, no. It's either one or the other.
So I finished it.
Finished him.
So Kevin did not get his last turn. He did not get to score all his stuff. And we counted all the points, and I had 27.
And I had -1 point.
Oh,
nice.
Because nice. Every house I had was -1 point minus my like 7. So I had like 8 houses that I never played. So it was terrible. Then we rescored as if I went, and then Melissa got another turn. She got...
So in the other version, I would have had 23 points.
The fantasy world that never existed. Melissa had 23 points.
But it's videotaped live for the world to see.
Kevin got I got 17 or 18 points, which was much, much better, but still not even close to Melissa.
Regardless, crushed you either way.
It's kind of funny, like a lot of these games, these older games, like you're like, I got 23 points. It's like, that's... not a lot of points. Like, Agricola, we were looking at some of the scores for Agricola. It's like, we got 45 points. It's like, nowadays, games are like, I got 310 points. It is kind of interesting, games nowadays compared to older games, how the point structure works. But anyway, I wanted to say on recording audio podcast, this will haunt Melissa for a long, long time.
Oh, no.
A long time. No mercy. And we know.
Forgive and forget, Kevin. It's a new game.
Video
saga.
Yeah, it's on video. Now it's on podcast. You know, in the movie Karate Kid, the person who has no mercy and sweeps a leg really doesn't end well at the end of the movie.
So. Or in the YouTube sequel that comes back later.
Listen, Melissa was just playing to the people who were watching live on your videos.
I know.
She's catering to the audience.
That I get on video then and I have have this different persona comes out.
Personality comes out.
So super nice Melissa's gone.
That is the story of Turn in Texas that will, yes, never be forgotten.
That's good stuff. That's a really interesting point that you bring up about scoring being differently, because I noticed that the other day I played some game where the board was like a 100-point board and then like I lapped it. And I was like, yeah, I'm making it around the second time. I wonder if I'd have to go back and look at some old boards. I feel like it was a thing 10 years ago to have a separate board. Like, doesn't Agricola have a separate scoring board?
Agricola has a scoring pad. Carcassonne has a separate board.
Yeah, a lot of the newer games have the board, like, just wraps around the edge of the board.
Yeah.
And I think that creation was like, well, we need to give more points so that we don't have giant spaces around the board or something. I don't know. I'd like to see a correlation, like, does adding the scoreboard to the board immediately equate to higher scoring games? Somebody research that.
Maybe. Although there was a game we played recently that had a Golf Mobile in Ohio has the scoring board on the actual playing board, and it only goes up to like 50. So anyway.
50. Is it a large board or a small board?
It's a very big board.
Oh, but only 50 on the edge.
And it's only like at the bottom. It only has 1 to 50 on the bottom of the board, which is kind of funny. So
interesting. Comment now.
So, Kevin, I know that Clank is not your favorite game.
You are correct.
So I missed the live play on Facebook. We had another commitment that day.
Oh, yeah. Melissa killed me.
I called it, and I won.
Without even the audience chipping in to help you.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a pretty, it wasn't terribly different. It was probably like 86 to 66 or something
probably
like that.
Probably about 20. It was 20 like points. 30. Oh, I think I had 95.
Yeah.
So you didn't rush out quickly, Kevin.
I did not rush. I was thinking about rushing, but I did hold to make the live play a little bit longer for the audience fan enjoyment.
See, what happened is I had a ton of red cubes in the bag, but Kevin just could not pull them out.
Oh, yeah. I looked at the end of the game. All the yellow cubes were, like, pulled from the bag. So I actually was almost about to die. So it was good that I actually did end it eventually. But, Melissa, I looked in the bag. There was, like, half of the cubes in there were red cubes, which was Melissa's color. So she just was very lucky in not killing herself. So...
What do they call that? It's not a green thumb. Is that a red thumb? You don't want to pick it out, right? The yellow thumb?
I should have let Melissa pick the colors. I think I pulled too many out of my own. That's what I need to do. Learn yourself. A magic trick on how to feel colors.
Ooh. I think if you could learn that as a magic trick, you could go someplace.
Yeah.
Not that you're not going someplace. Right.
Kevin, you're not allowed to sand your cubes so that they're like
feel the texture.
That's why Kevin always plays yellow.
So I know.
Well, cool. I think.
Let's go for it.
Go ahead. We've got a couple different things going on that you, if you're watching this, you probably could go back and rewind.
Or listening.
Yeah. This past Thursday, we just recorded a Tantrum Talks for the month where we talked about something. We'll find out on Thursday when we talk about it. But that was a live show that we just had. We've also got a bunch of different live playthroughs that we've been doing on different places. We're doing one with Renegade.
Arboretum
that you can check back into. We'll have done that on Wednesday. Kevin and Melissa, what are you guys playing?
Yeah, we're either going to play Silver Amulet from Bezier or Silver and Gold from Pandasaurus, or maybe both Saturday. So a couple days ago on our Facebook channel. And yeah, lots of stuff going on our YouTube channel too. So check those out.
Yeah. So if you listen to our podcast and you don't already subscribe to YouTube, that would surprise me. But go do it right now. Same with Facebook and Twitter. We have lots of fun, and we kind of cater our messages differently on all those. We have Instagram as well. We might even have a Pinterest board. Do you ever post stuff to our Pinterest board?
Katie does occasionally.
So don't go to our Pinterest board, but everywhere else.
Oh, and by this time this episode airs, we will have aired Will's top 10 party games.
Is it finally coming out?
We kept trying to hold it and hold it and hold it because of the current situation we're in, but it's like we just gotta do it and have people enjoy the episode. So
right, enjoy the episode. It was a lot of fun to put together. I actually wore myself out doing it. I took it all in one shot. Didn't even have a voice by the time I got done. This is your chance to go buy those games right now, probably on sale online. And then as soon as the corona lifts, you'll have plenty of stuff to play at your next party.
And some of these work well to play on video with lots of other people. So even though some of these are party games that are meant for lots of people, a few of them do adapt very well.
Except for like Happy Salmon.
Yeah.
Might be
gotta
exceptions.
Gotta be there in person for Happy Salmon.
Now the question is, which number spot on the list is Happy Sam?
Probably 3 or 4. other big shout out to our sponsors. I know we mentioned them at the beginning of the show, but you know, our sponsors definitely need support during this time. Definitely check out your local game store. Ours is Boardwalk. Game Toppers. You can go to their websites and to check out what they're offering. And Bezier Games and Final Frontier and others, you know, just really appreciate their support through this time, and I hope you support them.
Yep. Game Steward, too. Give a shout out to them because they are a great place to check out online right now. Good chance to get a hold of some of the games that you might have missed on Kickstarter. I think that pretty much wraps it up for another episode. Thank you guys so much for joining us. Hope you're doing well, staying healthy, and having fun. We'll catch you next time. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Tantrum House Board Game Podcast. If you liked any part of this at all, find and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and tantrumhouse.com. Like us, share us, email us, call us, or send us a postcard to Tantrum House, 306 Barry Drive, that's Barry, Greer, South Carolina, 29650.